One correction on the announcements. The time for the nursing home is 3:30, although some do get there early to make sure that residents are able to be out in time for the starting of the service. But that was a misprint. It's 3:30. Also, we're glad to have several visiting with us again today. We're glad that Sarah and Dorothy are here. They were members for a while and chose to go off and worship with a lesser congregation. No, just kidding. but we're glad that they're back with us. And Juan is back, and well, temporarily at least. And we have several others that we're grateful to see here today. A few months ago, well, last fall actually, we started with the book of John and continued that up until about 5 weeks ago, ending with John 6. And the reason that we did that is we thought it would have a great value to go through the book of John. But I was gone a couple of weeks and some other things occurred, so we have not resumed that study, but we plan to resume it today, talking about the world's works. You remember John 5, 17, and 18? Well, let's go back and read it just in case your memory has slipped, since you slept a time or two since then. But Jesus answered and said to them, "My Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because he had not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God." So they sought to kill him, and we need to keep that in mind as we get into John chapter 7, because it's a large part of what occurs, especially early on. Jesus never violated the Sabbath day. In their minds he did, because he violated Sabbath tradition, but he never violated the law of Moses in any respect. So we do want to make that clear. But he was talking about his deity when he said, "My Father." Not our Father, not the Father, my Father. And they understood what he meant by that. And that's the reason they desired to kill him. Well, many still wanted him dead, so he had not been in Jerusalem recently. John omits a lot of the details that Matthew, Mark, and Luke include, and since they were written earlier, perhaps that's why he does omit some of those things. But after the feeding of the 5,000, John omits the Lord visiting the coasts of Tyre and Sidon, feeding the 4,000. He omits Peter's confessing him as the Son of God, and his appearance on the Mount of Transfiguration is not noted with Moses and Elijah. So a lot of time and material have been omitted since the end of John 6 and the beginning of John 7. Now we are at the time of the Feast of the Tabernacles, which occurs in the fall, and it's about 6 months until the final Passover and the final week of Jesus' life. So a great deal was omitted during the time between chapter 6 and chapter 7. In this particular thing, we have Jesus engaged in a conversation with his brothers. And they are named in Matthew 13 and verse 55. James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, who later went by the name of Jude, possibly because he did not want to be associated with the one who had betrayed Jesus. So he is henceforth called Jude. Jesus also, according to Matthew 13:56, had two sisters, at least two sisters. The only two brothers ever mentioned as followers of Jesus later on are James and Jude. If the others were, we do not know it. If his sisters were, it is not mentioned. None of his brothers, however, at this time, seems to believe on Jesus as the Son of God, as the Messiah. In fact, they seem to be taunting him to go up to Jerusalem and show himself to the world. Go up there and let the whole world, let all who are in Jerusalem, because people would be coming, making a pilgrimage there at this time of the year, many from various places. Go up there and show yourself to people that the whole world can see what you are doing. They had undoubtedly heard things, and they undoubtedly had heard of the reputation of Jesus and some marvelous works. They may not have seen any of these things personally, even though they were his family. And apparently they remained skeptical concerning the reports that they heard. They were raised in the same household. Perhaps there was a little animosity there. You know, a lot of times you may have heard a brother or a sister say, my brother or my sister and I don't get along very well. He was the perfect child, you know, and always got treated so well. Well, in this case, that would be true. Jesus was the perfect child. He committed no sins. And so it may be that there was a little animosity there just because that was the case. But for whatever reason, they seem to have rejected the truth concerning who he is at this particular time. For whatever reason, then, they encouraged him to show himself to the world if he could do these things. Notice again, John chapter 7 and verse 4. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. Does that not indicate a little doubt on their part? A little reluctance to accept this on their part? And John says that their motive was unbelief. For, verse 5, they did not yet believe in him. Now, an application of what we have witnessed here, his own family being slow and reluctant, a comment was made by Brother Guy N. Woods in his commentary on John, which I think is a good application and that all Christians ought to keep in mind. He said, not infrequently, those who seek to serve Jesus faithfully find the most intense opposition from their own relatives. And that is often the case. Sometimes you would think you would be in the best position to talk to them, and it almost seems like you're in the worst position because they don't want to hear from you. Sometimes that is the case. Not always, but sometimes that is the case. Well, Jesus replies in kind to them, and seems to use a little sarcasm here in verses 6 through 8. Then Jesus said to them, my time has not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil. You go up to this feast. I am not yet going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come. Now, we want to consider that answer a little bit. Jesus says his time has not yet come, and that is true in two senses. And he may be combining both of those in this particular case. In one sense, it was not the time for him to go up to the feast. Now, you would think that if you're going, you'd want to be there for the whole thing, right? But Jesus knows that they may be looking for him. They may be watching him so that they can oppose him the moment he arrives. So he's not going at the beginning. It's not time for him to go. He will go a couple days later when they're not expecting him. He's not going to show up with his relatives and so forth and be easy to spot. But he is going to go, but it's not time yet for him to go up to Jerusalem. However, there's another sense in which he can mean that, and that it is not yet time for him to go and be crucified. And if he went right away, that might very well occur. He is going to go, and he is going to be crucified in Jerusalem, but not at this time. It's not his time yet. However, he contrasts that with his family and says, it's always your time. Nobody's going to oppose you. You don't say anything that they'd get upset about, unlike the things that I have taught. Nobody's going to oppose you. Nobody's going to find fault with you. And so that's part of his answer. The other part is testifying of the world's works that they are evil. What does he mean by that? Let's read it one more time. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me. Now, these are strong words. But it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil. What does Jesus mean by that? What has he said? How has he testified that the works of the world are evil? Well, let's back up first to John chapter 3, verses 19 through 21. There are not a lot of specifics here, but the idea is certainly easily understood. John 3, beginning with verse 19. And this is the condemnation, and that the light has come into the world, and men, now notice, loved darkness rather than the light, because their deeds were evil. Well, that sounds very similar to what you heard here. I testify that its works are evil. That's what he had already said in John 3:19. Men love darkness rather than the light because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light that his deeds may be clearly seen that they have been done in God. So that would probably be one thing that would come to mind that he had already said. But there are more things, more explicit things, that are recorded in the Sermon on the Mount, for example. And that is very early on in the book of Matthew. Most of these things have already been taught by the time we get to John 7, because we're only 6 months of his life remaining on earth. So let's go to Matthew chapter 5 and look at some of the things that Jesus taught that people might have objected to. First of all, let's notice the hatred again from Matthew 5, 10 through 12. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Is not Jesus the epitome of being persecuted for righteousness' sake? Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heavens, for so persecuted they the prophets who were before you. So Jesus talks about the reaction to those who practice righteousness, to those who walk in the light. There is an adverse response. There is persecution. There is hatred that is involved. So Jesus testified that the world's works are evil. Now, is that word world referring to the entire world, Jew and Gentile? Possibly so, because many things that the Jews practiced, the Gentiles practiced. In fact, the Gentiles were usually worse. But maybe he is also referring to the Jewish world, the Jewish community, and he has even exposed some of the highest Jews with what they were doing wrong. And that's one reason why they hated him. Well, what examples do we have of that? Well, let's take Matthew 5, 21 and 22. Murder, they would agree, was wrong. But Jesus condemned the hate that led to murder. Again, verses 21 and 22. But you have heard it said to those of old, you shall not murder. And whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. They would not probably consider murder on most occasions, but they would consider hatred as being valid. Jesus challenged them on that. Unless the hatred is there, murder is probably not going to take place. It starts in the heart. It starts with that kind of an attitude and may well be expressed. So he went after the origin of the problem, which was not the actual deed being done, but the attitude that leads to that deed. Then he also talked about another thing that they probably didn't really like. In Matthew 5, 27 and 28, he talked about adultery. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. And adultery, they would agree, was wrong. But Jesus went further. He said, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So Jesus not only condemned the act, but the lust in the heart, the fantasies in the mind that led to the adultery. Well, many people were guilty of that. Many people were guilty of hatred. So they would not appreciate what Jesus had to say on those subjects. You know, you could get up and say adultery is wrong and all day long. I've been good on that. You could get up and talk about murder. Yeah, I never murdered anyone. But when you start getting to motives and lust in the heart and hatred in the heart, now you quit preaching and gone to meddling, as far as they were concerned. Jesus also exposed their spiritual hypocrisy. And that might be the worst of all, as far as they were concerned. He exposed their spiritual hypocrisy in giving. Matthew 6, verses 1 through 4. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues. Can you imagine that? Hey, I'm about to give a big gift. You know, sound the trumpet. But that's the way he puts it. And when you do a charitable gift, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. So the important thing is that God knows what you're doing. Don't be sounding a trumpet to call attention to men. If that's all you want, the glory of men, Jesus said, assuredly, I say to you, you have your reward. Yes, you'll hear men praise you, but don't expect any glory from the Father, because you wanted the praise of men and you got it, and that's all you're going to get. Jesus exposed their hypocrisy. He did the same thing with regard to praying in Matthew 6, 5 and 6, where he says, and when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the street, that they may be seen of men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Probably at some point, since he talked about the street corners, a mother or father would be out with a child, and as they're walking by, here's somebody praying on the street corner, and you can see the child saying, what's he doing? He's praying. What? He's praying. On the street corner. Yes, he's praying on the street corner. That means he's real spiritual. Well, that's the kind of response they wanted. And if that's all that you want is the praise of men, you get that, but you don't get anything more. Third, he exposed their hypocrisy in fasting. Verses 16 through 18. Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Can you just imagine people doing that? Oh, I'm so hungry. Can you hear my stomach growling? That's the kind of people they were. They wanted the praise of men. They weren't doing their religion for God. They were doing it to be seen of men. But when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. But that's not the only hypocrisy that Jesus mentioned. He also talked about their judgments on others. Matthew 7, 1 through 5. Judge not that you be not judged. Now, everybody in the world, if they've never opened the Bible, knows that verse, because it's used wrongly. Why don't we read the text here and find out what Jesus is saying? For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. Are you going to say something evil about a brother or about someone? What about you? You'll be judged the same way. And with the same measure you used, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own? Their judgment was not honest. It was self-righteous judgment. Or how do you say to your brother, let me remove the speck out of your eye, and look, a plank is in your own? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. I'm reminded in this passage, and we have another one to look at in Matthew, but in Romans chapter 2, Paul said something of the same order. In verses 21 and 22, when he said, you therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal? You who say do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? And so again, Paul is also dealing with the hypocrisy. You know, they might point their hands at Gentiles about how evil they were and the things that they did, but you know, they were doing some of those same things. And that's hypocrisy. So Jesus talks about judging from this perverted sense of values. You judge others and you're doing some of the same things, or you're doing something worse and yet you're complaining about them. Jesus also judged them in their hypocrisy relating to obedience. Let's notice Matthew 7, 21 through 27. Matthew 7, 21 through 27. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. What? You mean we don't just get to say, I believe in you, Lord, and that's it? No, that's what a lot of people say. That's not what the Lord said. Many people are going to call upon him to enter into heaven, but not everybody who calls upon him will enter into heaven. In fact, only he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. A lot of people are very religious with their lips, but their lives don't reflect that at all. Then he goes on to explain further. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who builds his house on a rock. Here's the point. The wise man hears and does them. The one who built his house on the sand hears but does not do. That's hypocrisy. Jesus exposed that. And so you can see why many people despised him, especially the leaders who were guilty of these things. Are we guilty? What about those who call themselves Christians? Do Christians fail to read the Bible? Isn't that hypocrisy? Do Christians fail to study the Bible? Isn't that hypocrisy? Do Christians fail to live the Bible? Isn't that hypocrisy? We talked about that somewhat last night, about how ironic it is that people tend to view a church building as the church, when in the first century, they didn't have church buildings. They met in some buildings, sometimes rented, sometimes free. But they didn't own their own buildings. But here we have in the New Testament, Christianity referred to as the way. Today we have people referring to it as the place. It's not the place, it's a way. It's a way of life, and you have to read the Bible to understand what the way is. You have to study the Bible to know what the way is, how to walk in it. And then you have to live what you have studied. If we fail to do those things, are we not hypocrites? Now, let's also notice something else Jesus said. This probably aroused a lot of animosity too. Matthew 7, 13 and 14. Enter in by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Now, take this out of our modern setting and put it in the first century. Jesus is not sitting with us in our society today and saying, you know, there's a lot of atheists out there. There's a lot of Buddhists, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Hindus, a lot of different religions that are not true. And, you know, few are actually going to be saved. And everybody sits around and says, oh, yeah, yeah, all of us who are Christians will be saved. It's the rest of the world that's going to be lost. No, that's not the comparison in Matthew 7. Jesus is talking to the Jewish community. All of these people thought they were going to be saved because they were Jews, because they were of the seed of Abraham. And Jesus is telling them that it's going to be few. Now do you see why there's such hostility? You know, if I say there are some atheists out there that aren't going to make it, you're probably not going to be upset. But if I say there are a lot of Christians who may not have eternal life, that might just make you a little upset. Well, that's what Jesus said to them. You think because you're Jews, you're all going to be saved. But you're not. And the same thing is true of Christians. There are many who call themselves Christians who have never obeyed the gospel. And even among those who have obeyed the gospel, some are not living right. Few excludes a lot of people. Many includes a lot of people. So Jesus challenged their thinking. And he also challenged their traditions and their cultural practices as not having come from the law of Moses and not something that God was interested in seeing the way that they were doing. He is not in harmony. Jesus is not in harmony with the spiritually correct of his day. He heals on the Sabbath day. He condemns the spiritually elite. He testifies that the world hates him because their works are evil. In Matthew 23, Jesus even goes a little further in denouncing some of the spiritual leaders of his day, even suggesting that they were profiting financially from religion. He hadn't done this yet, but he would soon. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 14. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! And by the way, if there's any doubt about who he was talking about, he called them hypocrites about seven or eight times here in Matthew 23. And he called them by name, saying they were hypocrites. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore you will receive greater condemnation. You don't think there are people trying to make money off of religion today? Have you thumbed through some of the TV stations? I try to avoid them. Occasionally I come across something. Well, one thing that is common to almost everybody is we have to have money. Pleading, sometimes crying, begging for money, money, more money. Well, I don't think they were that overt in the first century, but some of them were making money off of people's misery. A lot of the TV shows and some of the popular books never follow Jesus' example of testifying of the world's sins, do they? They don't do that. For them, it is all about feeling good and trusting in yourself and getting wealth for yourself, which always starts by giving them some of that wealth, by the way. But also, consider now that the world oftentimes hates Jesus to this very day. Even though he might be revered by a large segment of society, many still do not appreciate him. You have skeptics like Voltaire and Thomas Paine, who in Age of Reason took issue with a lot of things that are in the Bible. You have Robert Ingersoll, well-known skeptic in the 1800s. Madeline Murray O'Hare, who died pursuing money. Christopher Hitchens, who is now passed on. Richard Dawkins. All of these want to be free to practice sin. And that's one of the reasons they hate Christ and they hate Christianity, because their deeds are evil. And because Jesus exposes the world's deeds as evil. They get angry. And probably more this week than last week if you dare to say homosexuality is a sin. But it is. They become belligerent and defiant. Jesus, though, came to save people from their sins and their punishment. Make no mistake about it. Those who live and die in sin will be punished. Jesus knows what sin causes in people, and he knows what the punishment is, and therefore he came to save people from their sins. The sins that people engage in can't save anyone. Those are pleasures that some people like and enjoy. But Jesus exposed these things as sin, and because of it, many desired to kill him. And we'll look at that a little bit more next week. But things have not changed since the first century. Things have not changed since the first century. People still don't like sin to be condemned. They don't want anyone to testify that the works being done are evil. But they are. The good news of the gospel is, you don't have to be there. God can save you from your sins. You've got to give them up, though. God's not going to save anybody in their sins. I think that's another false concept that many want to believe in is, God doesn't like this, and, it goes against his grain. But he knows that I can't give it up, so I'm going to go ahead and keep doing it, and God will just forgive me. No. Sin has to be repented of. God does not save people in their sins. He saves people from their sins. And so, whatever sin you may be dominated by, you do not have to endure that. There is a way out. There is a way up and out of the mire of sin. But it involves being willing to give it up and to practice righteousness instead. Jesus died on the cross to save people from this. He knows what sin is. He can define sin. He can explain it. He can testify that its works are evil. And he will talk about the place where sin leaves someone, eternal fire. But you do not have to be there. You are not required to go there. You are not foreordained to go there. You can go to heaven. It's your choice. If you haven't made that choice yet, why not make it today? Repent of your sins, whatever they might be. Confess that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and be buried with him in baptism so that your sins can be cleansed, washed away, and you will be made pure and holy and righteous by the blood of Christ. If you have already done that but have been walking back in old ways, stop now before it gets worse. Sometimes there comes a time when a man's conscience becomes past feeling. There sometimes is a point of no return. Don't let yourself go down that road. Don't go that far. Straighten things out now while you have the opportunity. If we can help you, come while we stand and while we sing.